My name is Prashant Kumar. I'm here with Steve Firestone and Michelle Fisher. And let me talk a little bit about myself first, and then I'll introduce Steve and Michelle also. As some of you guys know, me a little bit because we have been doing these webinars for the last couple of months, and we have done them in past also. I have a small company. I call my company as My Realty Gains. I personally have technology background. For the last 25 years, I have been doing technology stuff in my day job, mostly basically, management and technology stuff. I have managed teams all across the world, in different continents. But in the last 5-6 years, I have been doing real estate. So I do have a small portfolio of myself for myself, for single families, which I bought in the olden days. And then I jumped into multifamilies. I own about 100 units for myself. But other than that, I've been involved in GP capacity in many projects. And, I've been involved with Steve and Michelle also for a couple of projects. And, my strength is to, look at the deal, take it apart, do the meticulous underwriting, and, that's my expertise, basically. I can do everything in a deal. I have been, when I say I'm involved in GP capacity, GP, KP, putting together the deal, helping the asset management, everything I have done. So we are sort of ready to do our own syndication also. In addition to that, I have looked at assisted living market for myself, and I have invested in assisted living projects in California, and we are trying to expand that practice as well. But as the time goes, in the last couple of months were very difficult because of the obvious reasons. But we are on the path to acquire a few more properties in assisted living space as well. That is my introduction. Now let me talk about Steve and Michelle. I don't want to steal the thunder for myself, but I just wanted to communicate about myself so that people know about me too. So yeah, Steve is the CEO of Crown Bay Group. He's a veteran of real estate industry. He moved into real estate in 1998 and has since been directly involved in many aspects of this industry. He started out buying, rehabbing, and managing his own residential portfolio, moved into property development, running multiple companies, redeveloping outdated and commercial properties. And, he has done some new housing build also. I'm going to cut short, Steve, your introduction, but I can talk about him. He has done many, many projects, and he has been very successful in multifamily area. I don't even know how many units he has. I think more than 2,000-3,000 units at this point. And a little bit about Michelle. Michelle is a property management executive with 30 years of experience in property management. Her focus is property operations, asset management, sales, marketing, staff training, and acquisitions and disposition. She does the whole thing. In the front, I would say Steve is the front, but Michelle takes care of the whole, everything else. I work with Steve. I have never talked to Michelle in past, but I know the back is being taken care of by Michelle on the projects that I'm involved in with Steve, I talk to Steve almost on a monthly basis, we exchange emails and stuff. So Michelle is known in the industry for her strong leadership skills, troubleshooting expertise and repositioning of struggling assets. That's her competency. Michelle has an extensive working knowledge of the Atlanta multifamily market, as well as managing properties as in many other markets throughout the country. Right? So guys, again, I can talk about you for a long time, but I cut short your introduction. So today's webinar is primarily because of the obvious reasons, we are in a phase in COVID where we have existing properties and new deals, right? I know a lot of syndicators are looking for new deals, but at the same time, we know that how difficult it is to run the existing projects efficiently. So for that reason, I invited both Steve as well as Michelle for this call so that we can talk, we can hear from them. We can hear from them about what they have been doing, about what they have been doing for their existing projects as well as for the new deals that they are looking for in the market and what are their plans. So the overall scenario is the full knowledge sharing from the beginning of the deal and asset
All
management
done.
deal, but at the same time, focusing on what is especially that these guys are doing. Having said that, I mean, so Steve, welcome.
Hi, Prashant. Thanks for having us on, first of all. As Prashant said, I'm Steve Barstern. I've been doing, a lot of different types of things in real estate since late 90s. Really, what we're here to talk about, multifamily, is what I really decided to specialize in, starting Crown Bank Group in about towards the end of 2013. I was looking in a lot of markets when we started the company, and it just so happened that Atlanta was the first place we did our first deal. And as they say, once you do a deal, somewhere, the brokers come back to you and usually start offering you more deals. And next thing you know, we had quite a few deals here, and we actually relocated to Atlanta to run that. So although we do look at other markets, we are predominantly specialists in the Atlanta market now. And then over the last sort of 5 years, probably in the first 3 years, we had about 2,000 units, probably about $150 million worth of real estate deals altogether. A lot of those we sold off. We have about 13 deals in total that we've done, and probably I think at least six of those, if not seven of those, has gone full cycle. So we've made some very good returns for people. Some of those were things that we held anywhere from 18 months, some 2 years, and a couple of them were 3 years, which is probably about the longest that we did. Last year, we sold off about four properties. I'd like to say I knew there was going to be a problem this year, and that's why we sold, but it was just good timing and offers we couldn't refuse at the time. So very happy that we did that. And really, last year, at the same time, might sound counterintuitive, but we were also buying at the same time we were selling last year. And that's really because, every deal, as I'm sure everybody probably knows, it really is its own separate business, unless you're running a portfolio where you could, really say, okay, you're balancing the portfolio and some of them are performing better than others. Well, when you're doing deal by deal, and we have some investors that cross over, and come into different deals, but there's also different investors that are only in one deal, whatever. So really, for us, every deal has to perform well. And every deal has its own, obviously, cost basis that you're in for and profit that you're projecting to make. So if it hits those targets, we sell. And it's as simple as that. So if we get lucky and, we try to underwrite reasonably conservative, if we, pass our projections that are, 3, 4, 5 year projection, and we're only in year two, we sell. It's pretty much as simple as that. So we've been lucky enough to do that quite a few times. Last year, as I said, we started buying back. So this is really our sort of phase two of scaling the company. So we'll hope to, now buy back more over the next, couple of years than we already did before. Obviously, with COVID, that sort of stifled things a little bit. Things were quiet for a while, and of course, we were as nervous as everybody else that how that would affect us and, whether we would, have a problem with collections. I know when the lockdown started, and I think March was still a normal month for most people in collections, but then everybody in the industry, you probably saw things and people talking on boards on, you know, about multifamily and articles, and everybody was going to wondering what's going to happen by the end of April. You know, are collections going to be 50%? Are they going to be, you know, 75%? Where are they going to be? And of course, most people found out that they weren't that bad across the country. Some markets better than others. I guess it depends on the market that you're in, you know, that you're invested in. And, you know, luckily in Atlanta, there seems to be, you know, a shortage of workforce housing, which is what we specialize in. So we've actually had the opposite proven come true, where we've actually seen our occupancy go up. Really, that's been in more in the last 6 weeks, I think, than anything else. But, you know, I think during the beginning of the lockdown, you know, we got through April, then we got through May, and then we got through June. And every month it was the same thing. Everybody's like, oh, what's going to happen in that month? Well, I'm happy to say that we're in August now, and it's the sixth of the month. And Michelle sent me a copy of our collections this morning for up to the sixth of the month so far. And it's been the same as every other month. We've been lucky enough that we've, I think we're roughly on average over 4 properties in Atlanta right now at 90% collections on the sixth of the month already on all properties. And all 4 properties, as I said, in the last 6 weeks, we've had a lot of people, I think after the lockdown, thought, okay, well, if you're going to move, now's the time to move in case there's another lockdown or whatever. So we've actually seen our occupancies go up, and we're, you know, very as close as you can get to having 100% occupied properties on all of them, which is pretty great. That's not to say that we haven't had some delinquency. I'm sure everybody knows there's, you know, various eviction moratoriums, and most of that is from the federal government, was on the covered properties, which is Fannie or Freddie or HUD loans. But there has been also state moratoriums in certain states, certain cities that cover other properties. And to top it off, even on the properties that aren't covered, we have no courts open. So even on the properties that we could file on, there's no courts to do evictions anyway. So that's really hurt us a little bit. Happy to say it's not too much, but that's probably been the biggest problem, if anything, is that, you know, a landlord's only weapon really is to be able to evict people if they don't want to pay rent. So we're very happy that, you know, most of the tenants have been pretty understanding and actually paying their rent without too much hassle, you know, although you're always going to get professional type tenants who they're professional at not paying rent and they know how to play the game. So we do have a few of those. And, you know, luckily, like I say, having the little bit higher occupancy has sort of made up for that and still really kept our collection steady at what we were getting, so, you know, previously. As a matter of fact, I think our collections are, some of them were the highest we've ever had. You know, we're doing pretty good in that. But for a couple of months, I was telling Prashant before we came on that we weren't doing anything. I mean, as far as buying and stuff, I think everybody just really just pulled out of deals they were in and nobody was doing anything. And, you know, really just on that side of things sat around for a while and wondering when could we ever buy again and things like that. Happy to say now in the last month, we've seen deals getting done. We're doing deals. But during that time, while I was sort of taking a break, Michelle was the one who was managing the properties and making sure that, you know, on that side of things were running, making sure the staff was doing everything possible to work with the tenants and all that. And, you know, she can tell you more about that and what we've seen on the operations side over the last few months.
So, Steve, would you say that, I mean, because of all the money that is coming to renters, you know, pockets, you know, all the grants, you know, they are getting, you know, paychecks that they are getting, all the stimulus. Do you feel that we are in sort of a bubble right now? I mean, when that help from the government stops coming in, do you see that coming that might create an impact on us in our business?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly helped, and it was important that that money was there. It also was very, you know, quickly decided what they were going to do because they knew they had to get something out, and it wasn't really very well thought out. So it, you know, created a sort of a lot of, you know, things that nobody thought of, like, you know, give people money. Are they going to pay their rent, or, you know, are they going to use it for what they're supposed to? And of course, some do and some don't. But sure, you know, that extra money, you know, obviously made it possible to keep the percentage of people paying, a higher percentage of people paying rent. I don't think there's really any doubt that there is going to be another stimulus. I know they're still deciding what it's going to be, but, you know, there's certainly going to be something. What we're hoping as landlords or housing, you know, operators, that providers, that there will be some sort of rental assistance, not necessarily just giving people money. And that was really the biggest problem with the first time, is that it wasn't very explicit what the money was for. It's all very well and good to say, like, you know, oh, just no evictions. You know, like, it's Christmas, no evictions for anybody. Well, we're running a business, and, you know, it probably is illegal, if nothing else, that, you know, the government can just tell you, sorry, you can't, you have to just let everybody live for free. If they don't feel like paying, they don't have to pay. If they do, they do. Well, that's, you know, that's not going to fly this time around. And I have heard some stories of some operators actually filing lawsuits against the federal government. And today I heard that some operators filed against, I think it was Indiana state government, for their moratorium. And I think that if they don't have some specific, you know, rental assistance, that it in some way has to go for rent or to the landlords, then there will be a lot of pushback from especially the bigger landlord groups and your, you know, national housing associations, national apartment association, and people like that, to make it fair. Because again, there are a lot of tenants that don't use it for what it's supposed to be for, not to mention they were getting more money, some people, than they were getting from working. And we know for a fact from our properties, just from, you know, things we hear from staff on site and stuff, that tenants are, some tenants are even saying things that they don't even want to go back to work. Why should they? They're getting more money than they get at work. So I think too much money is not a good thing, you know? So they have to find a balance.
So have you seen, I mean, I know initially in the first couple of months, you know, when the lockdown started, like April and May, we saw that like everything kind of stopped, right? There were no deals happening. All the finance brokers were, you know, they, you know, I talked to Anton and he said, you know, if he was doing 100 deals a month, now he's doing one or two. So yeah. I mean, as a, you know, just as a, you know, ratio. So it had completely stopped. I mean, now we are in August. Are you seeing a compression in cap rates, or they are starting to rise? What is the feeling, you know? Mm-hmm. How are you evaluating the deals? Let's, you know.
Well, you know, we've been keeping a very close eye on, you know, economic news, of course, and industry news, and trying to weigh up and, you know, and sort of analyze the market every week to see, you know, where we're going. Try to, you know, it's kind of like driving without a map. You know, we're trying to figure out, well, where are we going, you know? And, you know, I think there's still a lot of money out there that wants to buy deals. And everybody sort of pulled out because of deals at the time. Most of the deals I know, whether it was us looking at things to buy or people I know, they, you know, big guys, small guys, just pulling out of deals, totally unknown what was going to happen. So, you know, for a couple of months, I think it was just totally dead, you know. The last 6 weeks, I noticed, you know, it slowly started coming back up, people coming out. I think we're just getting used to where we are, where we're going, and we know that it's going to be over someday. There's obviously a lot of talk about vaccines and things like that, and you know, it's inevitable that there will be something. So you know, you have to take a view of you know, the medium-term market, and you know, where is it going to go? Are things just going to go back to where they were? How long is it going to take? Is it a, you know, V-shaped, W-shaped, or U-shaped recovery? Things like that. And you know, I think there hasn't been any real drop in pricing, and it's certainly not at deal levels that we're seeing before. There's not a lot on the market. A lot of the stuff is sort of semi off market. It's still with the brokers, but they're not really pushing the marketing a lot, except for certain deals. So there's a lot of things that are there just testing the waters, you know, where brokers have these deals and they'll just call up their handful of regular buyers and see if they're interested or if are they buying yet. And I haven't really seen anything much on or a big percentage of people are not dropping their prices, let's put it that way. I see a lot of brokers just touting around deals for prices that were pre-COVID prices. That I see no point in. Why even look at anything that isn't priced correctly for taking into account the risk that's clearly here? I mean, we really don't know what's going to happen, you know, overall, and how long it's going to take. And you know, I'm happy to buy, but it's got to be priced accordingly for my risk. And of course, you can't expect investors to invest in properties unless there's a reason to, you know. And that reason is we're buying, you know, if we find, which we have found a couple of deals that we're in the middle of buying, which we were able to make the right offers on. And that was based on, you know, risk to reward and how long we're going to go. Like we're looking at things now and saying, okay, as far as underwriting that you asked about, we're saying there's going to be no rent increases or organic rent increase anyway for the whole first year. That's what we're underwriting, even though we might know that might not be true. It, you know, could be better, but it could be worse. So we're just saying in our underwriting, no growth for the first year. And then the second year, we're putting in something like, I don't know, 1.5%, which is nothing. I mean, you know, an $800 apartment, what's that? Like, you know, not even $20. So it's very conservative. And then on the other side, we're doing showing a little bit lower, you know, a higher delinquency number. We're showing, you know, slightly lower occupancy, and that's really sort of to stress test it and see if it still works. And if it still works with those, oh, and the other thing is other income. We're not charging late fees right now, so we're just saying, okay, for our underwriting purposes, there's our other income's going to be down. There's no late fees for the rest of the year, which is almost, you know, really still a half a year left almost. So when you take all that stuff into account that I just said, and it still works, then it's a good deal. So the only way that works, though, by doing that, is the price has to come down. So we've worked out, and I've seen this also on one of CoStar's reports, came to the same conclusion that a deal really needs to be priced about 15% less than it was pre-COVID to take these things into account. And of course, we hope we're going to have a big win because things are going to go back to normal. But really, that's what it's all about right now. If you can buy cash flowing properties right now for around a 15% discount to what we think they would have gotten, you know, prior to, you know, by March or pre-March, you know, beginning of this year, then that should be priced in. You would imagine that if you're having a 2, 3, 4 year hold from now, you know, in 2 or 3 years from now, I have no doubts that, you know, whatever's a, you know, was a 5 cap is going to be a 5 cap then. And maybe we're buying it at a 6 cap or hopefully even higher right now. But people are buying things without discounts now. So that makes me feel good when I know we're buying for a discount. But they are there, but it's just really sorting through what's on the market. Really, this is where broker relationships come in, you know, making sure that you're asking your broker who is, you know, why do they want to sell? It's always about the backstory, isn't it? Whether it's a good or bad market. And, you know, why are they selling? Do they really, you know, a lot of people just, you know, don't want to hold properties because they are worried. They'd rather sit on cash. Okay, well, we're a buyer if you price correctly. If not, no, you know.
As long as we get some discount in whichever form, you know, 10, 15% discount on the pre-COVID price, in some ways or the other, I mean, I think that's what you're saying is that's where you can put your fingers on the deal. So yeah, I know we have talked a little bit about the front end, and I know Michelle has been waiting also. So I want to kind of turn a little bit towards Michelle and start asking some. And we have some questions here, and we will take them again a little bit later on in the chat box. We have some questions, but Michelle, you know, I would, you know, towards you, you know, what are your feelings? You know, how have you been managing your existing deals, and what do you project going forward? I mean, you'd like to hear your comments. You know, what all have you been doing? You know,
I mean, when COVID-19 hit, I told Steve, I said, I'm going to make an executive call here, and I'm going to run the properties just like I always have. We're not going to make any changes, and we'll adjust if we have to as we go along. And it's worked very well. I mean, all of our policies and procedures are still in place. We really haven't changed anything as far as our operations go. And it's been very effective with our collections and our occupancy.
So when you say you have not changed any policies, help some of the guys, I know some of the guys here on the call maybe want to know a little bit more deeper. I mean, what do you do on a day-to-day basis in terms of managing a property, so that they kind of get a feel of, you know, what is your, you know, like life in a day, you know?
Well, my life in a day is different than the on-site people's life in a day. But as far as like, you know, the on-site, you know, management, you know, like typically we always send out our late notices on the 6th of the month, and we file our warrants on the 10th. We have done that every single month, even through the pandemic. So now, like, one of our properties, they're starting evictions because the CARES Act expired on our properties on July 29th. So, you know, we're first in line because we followed all of our procedures that we have in place to ensure that when the courts opened back up, that we would be first in line for evictions. So those are like some of the policies that we kept in place, where I think other companies stopped filing. They just kind of said, we're just not going to really enforce any of this, where we have.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean, I mean, a lot of those were evictions that were already people that were delinquent prior to COVID. So it isn't just people that can't afford their rent now, just to clarify. So we have people that were already just about to actually physically be evicted, that were already delinquent for months before COVID, and now they're finally are, you know, being evicted. So it's not all people that just are currently delinquent.
So basically those folks have been taking a free ride for the last 3-4 months, so to say.
Yeah. Right. And by us continuing, you know, to knock on doors for rent and tell people that, you know, we're still filing our warrants on the 10th of every month, it's really helped with our collections, I feel.
So, I mean, there's a question here, you know, for you, Michelle, is have you suspended any of the property amenities like pools or fitness
rooms? Yes. Yes.
And for that, are tenants looking for any concessions?
No.
In some way?
We use the Georgia Apartment Association lease, and it doesn't cover amenities. An owner can change amenities at any time. Amenities aren't included in your rent. So the Georgia Apartment Association lease really covers us on that. And some of our properties are smaller, where we don't have a lot of amenities. You know, we have a 346 unit property that does have all the amenities, fitness room, pool, but then we have 113 unit property that doesn't have a pool and just has a laundry facility. So, you know, no, we have not. I mean, the residents have been wonderful. None of our employees have COVID-19. We have not had any reports of any residents having it. So, I mean, we've done work orders. We have not stopped since this whole thing started. We make sure our maintenance people wear their masks, their gloves, office people. We don't let people into our office. You know, there's a big sign that says you must have a mask, but we have a box out there with masks that they can borrow. But, you know, we've protected our employees, but we've kept our policies and procedures in place and operating the properties.
Yeah, I noticed that at the beginning of COVID, there seemed to be a lot of people or a lot of you know, owners panicking and jumping the gun. You know, like Michelle said, she decided, okay, we're just going to do this and see what happens. Instead, a lot of other people I noticed were going panicking and saying, okay, well, let's just you know, give people a break now, or you know, do something, making a deal with the tenants, or giving concessions or whatever. And you know, you're sort of giving in before you even try. And you know, we got to remember, you know, you want to be morally correct and nice to people, but at the same time, we are running a business here. You know, we're not a, you know, mom and pop operation. We have you know, quite a few properties, and we have a lot of investors that we're responsible to them as well. And you know, we're not trying to act mean to anybody, but you know, if somebody really has a problem, that's different. But we haven't really had many people that have come in and actually said to us, oh, we have a problem. We can't. They're either pay their rent on time, which, I mean, today's the sixth of the month, like I said, and we've had 90% collections on average across the board. That's pretty good. That's without us trying to get people to pay. So it really is just a small amount of people, and they don't come and tell us necessarily they have a problem. They either just don't pay, full stop, or the majority of them just pay. So that's, you know, just shows you that most people, it is, a lot of the stuff you hear in the news isn't always so accurate. It really is a very small percentage, I think, that not just our properties, but just across the whole apartment living, that just don't want to pay for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, those who don't want to pay, I mean, for them, it is like free money coming in and they are just sitting and taking a ride on it.
Yeah.
But overall, as far as the management of the properties is concerned, what I'm hearing is whatever we did, it's not that we have reduced our, we have reduced what tenant is supposed to pay, irrespective of whether we had entities that we had to lock down for whatever reason. But I mean, yes, we have taken the amenities away, but even if you give the amenities to the tenants, you know, they're not going to come there for obvious reasons, you know. So It is in social, that this is in interest for everybody not to use those facilities. Number one, not to use those facilities. And number two, I mean, it really doesn't matter whether they are open or closed. But on top of that, I mean, you know, because of the COVID, of course, you guys are providing masks and everything to your tenants, you know, wherever needed. Have you ever had any problems with any maintenance guy not being able to follow the work order for this reason, or anything like that happened, or everybody was available to come
in? We have not had any issues at all.
No issues at all.
Yeah, I mean, we've run things so smoothly that we half the time forget we're in the middle of a pandemic. We have to remind ourselves because it is just business as usual.
Right. Yeah, we keep
with precautions. Don't get me wrong, with precautions, yeah, and absolutely, protecting our employees and our residents, but we're just operating as normal.
Yeah, I mean, we've been really lucky as like the one property that we have 346 units. And all our work orders on the whole property are up to date because, you know, we have good staff there. They're happy to do it. They're being cautious too. Of course, they're wearing masks, they're wearing gloves, but they are going and, you know, they're taking their job seriously and taking care of people's needs. So we are still, you know, taking care of the tenants and doing everything, you know, as normal as can be. But, you know, obviously under, you know, slight precautionary circumstances, but they are still getting their regular service. And like you said, if the pool was open, they probably wouldn't use it anyway, or whatever amenity it might be.
Yeah.
Just common sense.
Yes. No, great, great. That's actually a great conversation. And the reason is, I know some of us are on the front end, you know, like you, Steve. I'm also on the front end. We don't get to see what's happening on the asset management side. And that's a good conversation to know what asset managers are really doing during the COVID timeframe. And I mean, if anybody has any questions for Michelle, feel free to ask. But I'm just, you know, kind of making up some questions on the fly, basically for her to remain in, you know, for her not to feel neglected, so to say. But no, it is a great information. I mean, I personally have properties and for me also, the business has been as usual, you know, like what you guys are saying. Mm-hmm. And all we are doing is basically, we are taking precautions. Basically, all of our work orders are happening as it is. We are not in Atlanta, we are in Indianapolis, but same thing is happening. I mean, I just wanted to kind of exchange notes on this to make sure that we are not missing out on anything, you know. So
well, just to say again, from Michelle's side, I mean, you know, as you say, we're more on the front end and, you know, of course we have our own management company, which is Crown Bay Management, which Michelle runs that company. And she's the one who's really working direct, you know, as we said, day to day with the staff. So, you know, that's super important is, you know, having a good management company or somebody who manages your staff. I'm hearing it through Michelle, you know, we check in. We probably do talk every day or every other day, and, you know, various things that are going on, and just getting an update. But in general, Michelle's really dealing directly with the staff and all the properties, so, you know, on a daily basis, so she knows what's happening at every property at any time. But also, you know, to keep these people happy, you have to have someone like Michelle that actually knows how to talk to your staff. And, you know, they've been obviously have the same problems as everybody else. They're in this too. You know, they're worried about getting sick, whether it's at work or at home. They have all the same problems that everybody else has. So Michelle needs to also make them feel happy. And, you know, as much as we want them to care about the tenants, we care about them. And, you know, Michelle spends a lot of time, whether it's COVID or not, but especially now, you know, talking her staff through these things and what we're going to do and, you know, how we can operate and just trying to find ways around problems if there is a problem that because of COVID is different. So communication, whether it's staff on site with tenants or Michelle with staff, it is so key, to operations on multifamily. Just really important. I mean, management is everything on properties, really. We can buy whatever we want, you know. It can be managed in three different ways, you know.
That is true. That is
bad, medium, and great.
Very good. No, that's it. So, I mean, I would like to say something, you know. I typically call it these deals as, you know, having a baby, right? I mean, when you are getting into a deal, you know, you are anxious and you are closing a deal. So you think that, okay, the baby is born and I'm done. You know, so from an acquisition standpoint, yes, you are done. But the real work starts when the baby is born, right? So Michelle is the one who takes care of the whole thing.
That's right. That's right. The baby's born, and then we give it to Michelle, and she raises it for 3 years until we sell it.
So no, good point. Appreciate it. You know, guys, that's
a really funny analogy.
I always use that analogy. You know,
yeah, I've never heard that one before.
I remember it when my kids were born, and then somebody, and I was like telling, you know, my friend, you know, who had babies, and this was my first one, and he said, man, I want this thing to be done. And like my wife was in 8th month or something, and said, so then, you know, my friend's wife laughed at me, and she said, you know, when the baby is born, that's when it really begins. So
that right kind of,
it's true.
You know, so that kind of struck me, you know, and I always use that analogy, at least, you know, in multifamily and in other spaces also, but it's a good analogy at least. So no, good discussion. So I know that there's somebody who's asking the question, basically, let me see if we have pools and stuff we talked about. You know, I know we talked about pricing, right? Pre-COVID pricing. Folks are interested in knowing a little bit more mm-hmm. about pre-COVID and post-COVID pricing. If we have to go out and look for a deal now, I mean, and if it is a on the market deal, I mean, getting a deal from a broker and broker knows somebody has to sell it for whatever reason, mm-hmm. 10-15% discount, how would you handle that deal? You know, how would you include the reserves that are required by Fannie, additional reserves that are needed, you know, 12 months, you know,
yeah, whatever. That is a big-ish problem at the moment. That's it's all great getting a discount so that it you know, maybe covers your risk and everything. But, you know, from the lender's side, the lenders are actually being pretty good. Rates are really low right now. We have no problem getting, you know, we've got a Fannie loan on this property. We're closing next week. And, you know, something like 3.25%, like 3 years interest only. No problem. And the only problem is, of course, is they want 12 months principal and interest up front for a year. So a lot of people are wondering probably, well, how do you deal with that? I had someone asking me yesterday. And, you know, if I had any creative ways and, you know, there's not really a lot, but the only thing I could say is, you can, depending on the property and the market, get a waiver. Your broker, like we were doing deal through Arbor, Fannie Mae loan, and you know, Arbor can, they're a DUS lender, so they don't have to ask Fannie to do the deal. But if you want any waivers, whether it's pricing or you know, about reserves and things, then they have to get waiver from them. So they can ask for a waiver for your property, which may bring it down to, they might agree to 6 months if the financials look good. That's why it's important to be buying at the right price right now to compensate for that too a little bit. If you're buying it at a good deal and they're underwriting it, it's got a really good debt coverage ratio, they're more likely to give you, 6 months instead of 12. So that's, again, why it's important to buy right. So the bad side of this is that, if you're raising, if you have to raise another 12 months P&I, if on the face of it, if you just put it in your raise, it's really affecting your return quite a bit, your projected returns. And you don't really want to do that. Because really, you're going to get it back in a year. So what I've been trying to do is partially offset it against like CapEx and stuff. Like we raise money up front, like I'm sure everybody does. And it's not just for to use immediately. It's, we're raising our CapEx that some things are to do right away. Some of them, throughout the year. Some of them are to do next year. So we probably have about 2 years worth of money. So what I'll say is, okay, well, how much are we going to use for this year? And maybe there's, $200,000 or $300,000 that's not really even going to be touched till next year. And maybe that's, all that we're being held back. And I think 12 months P&I on this, it's a smaller deal. We're buying 93 units, this one. And it's about $300,000 for the year's P&I. So really that just covers it there. We'll say, okay, well, we don't have to raise more money because next year we'll get that back and just use it, for that. So that's one thing you can do. Or, maybe it was only half of that and you only have to raise half of the extra money. Or the other option is what we're trying to do. We have a bigger deal, 260 units that we're buying as well. And that's like $20 million deal at the moment. But for that, 12 months P&I is like $800,000 or $900,000. Well, that's going to really screw up my returns. So what we're doing on that one is we're actually borrowing that money completely separate from the raise. So we've got an investor who's going to put in that money for a fixed sort of good return, like a 10% return, but it's only 1 year. So to borrow that $800,000, it only costs us $80,000 instead of giving away all this extra equity to raise $800,000. And then they'll just get that back in a year and they got a good return on their money, a straight return of just a 10%, like a loan, and that's it. So that's another way you can deal with it as well.
Interesting. Yeah, these are good points, good pointers for new budding syndicators. I know a bunch of people who have been underwriting these deals left and right, and this 12-month P&I is throwing a lot of deals off the table, because they just cannot do the deal with those 12-month P&I to be raised up front and giving the equity away, and basically all the returns, they're not making sense. And I think that is one of the reasons why number of deals happening right now is below, of course, much, much below, but they're not ramping up as much as market is opening up. Even though you are buying, and some of us are also buying, but market is not opening. My mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not like everybody's buying. People are treading with, treading their water carefully, and basically, and they are not able to underwrite these stringent underwriting requirements. 12 months P&I, this just throws off the deal. So people are, So how is it impacting on the returns? To the investors? I know we had seen at some point, we were seeing like 8-9 cap. Preferred return. Do you see that going down? Preferred return being offered to the investors, or 70-30, 80-20? How is that?
I don't think that's really changed. But what we have had to do, I'm not saying we necessarily had to, because like we said, we have good collections. And really, overall, not a lot's changed from that point of view for us, luckily. But it could have. So really, from April, we stopped paying... doing distributions. Yeah. And so this will be now 2 quarters that we haven't paid a distribution, and just about every sponsor I know has done the same thing. It wouldn't be prudent not to do it, because you got to have a cushion here. This is a unprecedented event, and you've got to protect yourself. And by giving people distributions, you're not helping your investors, you're hurting them, because we're here to protect their investment. And just, you know, a distribution for our properties anyway, and our strategy is a small percentage of the overall turn. You know, we're really heavy on the back end of profits. So, you know, you might get 6, 7, 8% per year on a cash flow distribution. But of course, you know, on the back end is when we make all our money, and that's 6% a year, maybe for 3 years. But by the end of it, we're actually giving people what's equivalent to like maybe a 25% annualized return. So 6% is such a small part of it.
Yeah, that really doesn't matter.
You know, so when you explain that to people, then they go, oh, yeah, okay. And we're still on target to reach our projections, even with this happening, because it's still another 2 to 3 years out when we sell what we already bought last year. So I don't think that'll change our projections.
So, Steve, any other underwriting assumptions you are considering? I mean, I know we talked a little bit about, you know, putting the CapEx as borrowing the money, or just considering that it's on hold until you put it after 12 months into the CapEx budget. Are there any other underwriting assumptions you are taking in your acquisition for these deals?
Really, I mean, we're just trying to be conservative to make sure it works, and it has been working. I mean, we're buying this 260 unit deal, which was supposed to be go in the market back in March, and of course everything happened. They the broker got an OM ready for this group, and they just decided this is silly to launch this now. And they were expecting to get some, you know, in the high 90s to 100 a door. It doesn't need really anything done. They spent a lot of money there in the last 2 years, and I wouldn't have bought it for that kind of price. I wouldn't even looked at it at that time. And now, after a couple of months, or gone 2-3 months now gone by, and nothing's really changing that much yet, you know, with the COVID situation, they really just want to sell it, because it's just, they've got other things. They're in the middle of some ground up projects, which I wouldn't want to be doing right now. But and they really, it's the only asset they had in Atlanta. So they broker called up just a, you know, a couple of people that they knew that might want to do something. And we spoke to the owner about it. We had a conference call with the broker and told them what we would offer. And we justified it, though. You know, if you just throw out offers, it just offends people, you know. But if you have a good reason, that's always a good thing to keep in mind, for people to explain why they're offering it. You know, even to the broker, you know, explain to them where you're coming from. And, you know, we just said, well, based on, you know, the way the loan is now, plus, you know, the, as we talked about, these reserves and the risk that's, you know, in the market, and all these things added up, really came out to, I think we agreed on $77,000 a door. And they actually agreed, because they said to the broker, apparently, that, well, Steve really justified that. And, you know, we do want to get out of the market because it's the only asset we have there. And, you know, we know he can close, so we'll take that. And I felt good, because we weren't trying to just undercut them. We did it because that's what I felt I needed to, my risk reward to be. And, but that also represented potentially, you know, if it would have sold for what they expected pre-COVID, a 23% discount.
Wow.
So, and we've since shown that to equity groups that were dealing with raising money. And of course, they all love it, because it's showing a discount and it's also very conservatively underwritten, and it works. So, you know, it just shows you when those guys who are really fussy are going, yeah, the economics of this deal look really compelling. You must be doing something right, because they usually just never call you back. And then you know that they don't like your deal.
No, very good. No, I'm feeling, I mean, I don't know about others. I'm feeling very motivated, you know, so to say, after discussing all these, you know, points with you and with Michelle. And you know, I would ask a question, Michelle, to you now. As I mean, in terms of economic vacancy, I know we kind of touched base that we are collecting very good. I mean, you haven't seen any major impacts anywhere, right, in terms of the vacancy, you know, or new tenants, you know, or people leaving. I mean, any thoughts, anything that you might have observed in the last 4 months?
No, I mean, our financial statements, the performance has been better every month since February. So every month, the financial statements have been performing much better. And as far as vacancies, we're almost 100% occupied on every property. Now, mind you, of course, we do have our people that haven't paid rent for several months, but that's not a lot. Like, say, for example, on our 108 unit property, I have one person that we filed an eviction on. Everybody else has paid. Another smaller property, we have seven, but we bought that property in January 31st, and then we filed our evictions for February, and they went on hold. So, we only have those seven units. We want them because we want to lease them. I mean, we have traffic coming in. We have wait lists on all of our properties right now.
I think a lot of people want to get settled. That's what we've ne feel like the first couple of months of the lockdown, nobody in all of us, include tenants and us, no different. Nobody wants to go anywhere. No one wants to do anything. So they probably thought, are we even allowed to move? Are there any people to allowed to help us move? I mean, there's just so many things that they just felt like helpless. And then when there was started to open up a bit, like 6 weeks ago, maybe, they all started to come think, okay, if we're going to move, we better do it quick. And everybody wants to move and get settled and to ride this thing out through the fall kind of thing. So I think it's been a lot of movement around of in that way.
Very good. I mean, as I said, I'm feeling extremely motivated. I'm feeling better. I mean, being a syndicator, hiding in the closet for last couple of months, although we are starting to look at some deals now, but overall, when you hear somebody, firsthand experience, from the asset manager and from the front-end guys, it makes a lot of difference. I hope we are trying to get, I mean, I hope, our audiences are getting some value out of this conversation. We have about 23 people on this call right now. And guys, we have 4 more minutes and we can go a little bit more after that too. But are there any more questions? I mean, I try to cover as much as possible. There's a question somebody's asking, where's Michelle from? I said, so yeah, Michelle and Steve are both in Atlanta, one in Marietta and one in Alpharetta, right? Michelle,
Correct.
You are in Marietta or you are in Alpharetta?
Correct. I'm in Marietta. Steve's in the rich area of
Tell
Alpharetta.
me about it.
I'm just in Marietta.
Not much difference.
I'm just kidding.
No, everybody's kidding right now. It's informal conversation. There's a few questions which are popping up now. What has your acquisition criteria been during pandemic? Class A versus Class B or Class C? Minimum cash on cash? Somebody's asking. Lam is asking. My friend Lam is asking that question.
Well, we really just mostly do C properties. That's just what I've always specialized in, and we just do it and do it well. So I know a lot of people like to move up in classes, but we just know it so well that's there's good returns if you run them well.
Properly.
A properties are probably the ones, if anything, as people probably read in the industry news, that will suffer the most. They're probably more giving concessions, lowering rent, because it's a luxury to live there. You're going to start spending that kind of money on rent. You almost have the power to tell your renewal comes up. You're going to say, hey, you want me to carry on paying whatever it is, 2,000 a month or more? We want a reduction in rent, not raise your rent. Whereas we have, rents that are still lower than the market when they come up for renewal. So, we can actually raise them, but we're not really raising rents over market, but we're just bringing them up to market. So we've still been able to do that.
What's a decent return in Class C? You would basically you are giving to your investors, Steve.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, we're on the new one now. We are offering it as a 6% preferred return. And that's not really just COVID. We were doing that before as well, just because what prices were getting so high anyway that we were doing 8 before. But at the end of the day, like I said, we're really our bigger profit is when we sell.
Or
That's just the preferred return. you know, if someone's investing in a property because they need to live on that return, then they probably shouldn't invest. You know what I mean? It's not that much, you know, but, and there really isn't that much difference between, you know, 6 and 8% when you really add it up. So, you know, but what I can say is, you know, if it's not there, you know, it adds up and on your account anyway. Like, if let's say it wasn't 8%. Well, if there's only 6% cash flow anyway, that's what we're going to pay out. Although 2% still goes on your, you know, that investor's account to be paid as a catch up at the end before, of course, the GP makes anything.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Somebody's asking how much decrease in price would you ask for a senior housing project pre-COVID versus post-COVID? I do not know how much you are into a senior housing project, but.
Yeah, that's more your call on that one.
No, I mean, I'm not into senior housing. I'm in assisted living.
Assisted living, okay.
Yeah, so ours are, I mean, right now we acquired three single families, you know, 6 beds each, 18 beds in total last year, and we are in the process right now.
Oh, okay, I know what you mean. Yeah, that's, yeah. And so, I would imagine in that there's not really a lot of change because it's a different sort of, you know, these aren't working tenants.
Yeah.
So they're able to pay no matter what, I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a total different asset class, you know. Mm. Our cash flows are much higher. Our cap rates are much, much higher, you know, 15-20%, but our projects are much smaller, right? I mean, you get a lot of cash flow if you are 100% occupied. Right. I mean, due to COVID, you know, we wouldn't let new guys come in, so we are bare minimum surviving. But, I mean, that's intentional. But in those projects, you know, you can cash flow those properties like cash cows, you know, very easily. But that's not called senior housing. That's,
I see someone asking a little bit more about the returns, and really in general on our properties. I mean, there's, you know, nobody's perfect. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, 100% of our properties have done as good as, you know, some of our best ones, but pretty much, I mean, we out of 12 or 13 deals, the ones that we have sold, you know, most of them have produced, and don't forget, some of them have sold in like 2 years. So, you know, the less time, of course, you get a better overall annualized return, but most of them have produced, gosh, you know, on average, at least 30% annualized returns, which is pretty, pretty crazy. So that's including your cash. So basically what happens is at the end of the deal, you sold the deal, and like when we give everybody their statements, it'll say, okay, so you got, you know, 6% year one, 6% or whatever the preferred return is, they got that. Then you add on, okay, here's the profit from that deal for your, you know, if it's $100,000 or whatever, and then all added together, and then you divide it by the amount of months or whatever in the deal, and it really comes out to about average 30% return. And it's not, as I say in our deal resume, it's not just luck. I mean, that's, you know, if I don't think that we, I don't never say in my projections that we're going to do that, but I don't buy a property unless I think the possibility is there. Yeah. And that's really what I look at, that sort of return. So we probably, I think in our brochures, we say, used to say about average 18% annualized returns after whatever it is, 3 or 5 years, whatever the hold is, over those years, you know, for every single year, once we get the sale profits plus the cash flow added in. But, and I would never offer more than that because I found out the hard way in the early days. I'd underwrite something and think, wow, this is an amazing deal. It's like 20%, 7% IRR. And then I'd like put my deal brochure out and people would go, like, this is a scam. You can't make that kind of money. We're not investing. You don't know what you're doing. And of course, I do make those returns. You're just not supposed to tell people that. You have to overperform.
Yes.
So we say about 18%, but most of them have always done about close to 30%. Some of them have done more.
Wow.
But I'd like to think that, you know, when I'm analyzing it and at a reasonably conservative, that I know it still can get to about a 30% annualized. And if it's at least got that possibility, I mean, if I know that I'm tweaking my underwriting and trying to make it work, and I still can't even make it work over 20, then I'm thinking, what if it even underperforms? Then I'm really screwed. So,
Well, very good, very good. I mean, so great to discuss all this. You know, overall, I feel that whatever we wanted to discuss with you guys, we have gotten a great value out of you both. I mean, I'm personally feeling, accomplished hour of the day for me. I hope everybody feels the same. If there are any more questions, feel free to touch base with me or with Steve or with Michelle, whomsoever. But I just want to say thanks to Steve and Michelle for taking the time. I know you guys are very, very busy. I know you are working on so many great projects right now as we speak, and taking the time out, mental energy out of is a difficult thing. I just know that because I work on these projects and I work with Steve in past also, how difficult it is to take the time out. But I appreciate, guys, I really do. I mean.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having us on for sure. And I hope that we were able to, give some good information to people that they could put to use. And if anybody has any questions, I put up an email there for us. You can feel free to, contact us about anything.
Very good.
Well, anything to do with multifamily anyway. Okay?
Yeah.
No personal problems.
No, so, yeah, no good. Steve, thank you so much. Michelle, again,
thank you
so much. Very nice meeting you. I mean, even though I know Michelle for the last 1.5 years, I've not met her in person, face to face. This is the first time I'm meeting her, so very nice meeting you.
You too.
But I'm sure we will be talking more and working together more, guys.
Thank you.